Hello, I'm Glenda Meekins, writer for the Florida Catholic, and with us today are Bishop John Noonan and Deacon Joe Gassman, the director of the Permanent Diaconate. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
In Bishop Noonan's letter in June of this year, he spoke of the Permanent Diaconate and said, "Since the early days of the Apostles, the Catholic Church has held in great veneration the sacred order of the diaconate." He noted that in the early church, the deacons were very important to spreading the word of God and assuring the ministry of service to the poor and the elderly were being carried forth. So today, we're discussing this very important role of the diaconate in the church. There are three ranks of ordained ministers in the church: bishops, presbyters, and deacons. There are more than 13,000 deacons in the United States, 213 in the Diocese of Orlando, who are active in ministry. Today we will be discussing the differences between those orders, but most particularly, peering into the order of the permanent diaconate, who the deacon is, and his ministerial role within the church. Welcome once again, Bishop Noonan and Deacon Joe. So, Bishop Noonan, before we get started, can you clarify for us what the distinction is between bishops, presbyters, and deacons?
Well, I think we have to go back to the early church and hear in the scriptures, the Acts of the Apostles, where the apostles are considered the bishops of the church, the early church. And during that time, you will hear them, you know, as the community of faith begins to grow, that the community is enlarging and there are many issues arising. And one of the earliest issues that arose in the early church was the issue of taking care of the poor and looking after them. And again, what happened then was the disciples decided that they needed somebody to help. And that's the formation of the diaconate. So the diaconate is very important. It's a very enriching in the sense that their job was to be ministers as well, but also to be helpers. So in the early church, there was a need that arose to bring the diaconate into place.
So can you tell me a little bit about those early deacons and their selection process?
Well, the selection process, there were seven, I think, men.
Seven
young men chosen by the early church. And the one we hear about most is Stephen and Lawrence, the early church martyrs. And we hear about them preaching, but we also hear about them serving, looking after the poor, looking after the needs of the people. So it's very important for us to understand that growth and that need that came out of the early church for the need for people, young men, to serve. And that grew, you know, and then later on, the whole priesthood, a whole different kind of, is kind of a hybrid between bishop and deacon, became the in-between. But in the early church, it was basically bishop and deacon.
And I think it was interesting that in that process, it was the apostles went to the community and said, bring forth the men. Hmm. Bring forth seven reputable men that can take care of the community, that you trust.
Yeah.
And we still have that today. It's calling forth from the community.
And as you hear, you know, they were men of faith. That was the first, and then they were men to serve.
Those were the requirements, and still are.
Pretty much.
According to the United States Council of Catholic Bishops, or USCCB, for many years, ordained ministers ascended from one office to the other, culminating in the ordination to the presbyterate, or priesthood. The Second Vatican Council in 1962 to 1965, however, authorized the restoration of the diaconate as a permanent order of ministry. Why did they do that? Did we ever stop having deacons?
It really depends on your perspective. One of the things that they found out in World War II, especially in the concentration camps, is that you find the persons or people that help give the prisoners hope, and they were pulling them out. So they were pulling the priest out from the concentration camps and actually working them harder and putting them to death, separating them from the general population in an effort to despair the prisoners. And what they found is that there was no middle person there, somebody among the people that could raise the people's hope that there was something better coming.
So how did Vatican II's, you know, how did this come into play?
Well, I think you may have to go back to the early church again, out of need. After a while, what happened was there was a greater, more spiritual need, and that was the need for the Eucharist. Mm. So what happened then was the bishop decided to ordain ministry of priesthood. And priesthood really basically, after a number of years, took over from the diaconate to a large extent. And it wasn't until probably the Vatican II, believe it or not, it was the African bishops brought up the question of reintroducing the diaconate. The diaconate never really disappeared, because what happened was basically up to Vatican II, every priest was ordained a deacon and then ordained a priest. But unfortunately, the process was never, they never ministered as deacons. There wasn't the understanding. Because really what would happen is you would be ordained a deacon and a few weeks or a few months later ordained a priest. It was, there was kind of the seven steps to priesthood, you know, acolyte. Today we have ministries. We had the ministry of acolyte, the ministry of lector, the ministry of candidacy, deacon, and priesthood. Those are the steps to priesthood. But unfortunately, you know, diaconate was not highlighted until after Vatican II, when the church began to look at the history of the diaconate and how it could be re-implemented. And the church here in the United States was one of the first churches in the world to kind of really take a hard look at it. And again, Chicago and a number of other dioceses led the way. And I guess right after Vatican II, in the early 70s, the diaconate program slowly redeveloped. And it has been redeveloping and evolving more and more. You know, the first deacons that were called were, you know, again, the formation program was very limited. What do we need to train them for? Academics, spiritual, you know, pastoral, all of that kind of has evolved. So now we are at the stage of really looking at a whole program for the formation of the diaconate. And it's ironically, because we always think of the formation of priesthood. The formation of priests really wasn't until 1992 that a real formula, or a real, what can I say, guidelines for the formation of priests was formulated by John Paul II, Pastor Dabo Vobis, I will give you pastors. And out of that, then, the whole formation of diaconate really put on flesh. So I think today, compared to 20, 30, 40 years ago, we have a whole different program. It has evolved into a really, a very wonderful program where we can really walk and accompany young men to become deacons and good priests.
So that actually leads perfectly into my next question. So what is the role of the diaconate in the church today? And tell us a little bit about how those deacons fulfill the needs of the church in the Diocese of Orlando.
The deacons are very important to the church because they assist, they help, and they accompany our priests. So I let Joe kind of, he is the deacon, so he will tell you what he's informed, he's involved with the formation program, so he can share with his journey of faith.
Yeah. You know, just like the early church where the men were called forth from the community, that's our advantage. When you really look at the bishop's role as being the chief shepherd of a diocese, he has tremendous responsibility as shepherding the souls within the church, and also to have his fingers and understanding of what's going on out in the community that impacts the church, and the church in turn can lift up and help in the community. So we're looking for men that are already doing diaconate. You know, they're already doing service within the community, and then we'll sacramentalize that. They become the icon of Christ the servant within the community. We come from different job career paths. You know, we have police officers, we have bus drivers, teachers. All of those, when they take the formation and the education that we give them through the formation process, that they're going back into the community. They become that living light within the community. And then we bring that to the altar when we assist our priests.
So Joe, in a sense, they're the lay connection.
Yeah. I think Joe should maybe just talk about your own life, you know, that you're, you can share how you came to it. And that'll give them a practical step, you know.
It's always a God thing. You know, as I look back on my life a couple of times as going through Ignatian spirituality and the exercises, is that God really walked me through to bring me to where I'm at today. I mean, I started out in a small town trying to escape from my parents' control, and so I joined the military very young. And so after 22 years of being a heavy equipment operator, and then all of a sudden half my career as a human relations advisor, I find myself in a position where God was talking to me. I may not have been fully engaged in my faith life, didn't understand what a deacon was until somebody said, you know, you'd be a good deacon. I said, okay, somebody explained
that
to me.
But you were involved in your parish.
I was deeply involved with the parish. I was deeply involved with the community. I was already living the life. You know, everywhere I went as a naval construction force in third world countries, developing countries, you're always out in the community trying to raise their standards of living, to give them hope.
You were already out in the world serving.
So, you know, when I look back, it's like God had created me deacon a long time ago. And it was rooted from my family life through the career choices that I made, whether it was as a dump truck driver or a human relations advisor. And eventually my entire being was about serving the community.
So you bring up a good point. You know, the diaconate, you know, deacon means servant. So tell me a little bit about how the deacons serve. What exactly does a deacon do? Well, actually, let's back up a little bit. Let's clarify what a deacon is, and then if you can go on and elaborate on what are some of the roles of a deacon in the church today.
It's very interesting that a lot of times the first question a deacon will get is like, what can you do? And it's really not about what can we do. There's a lot that we can do, but it's really who we are and what we bring to the liturgy. You know, we are servant. We are engaged in the community. And so we bring that. And really, if you listen to the prayers of the liturgy, is that you said it very well, is that we become the intermediary between the laity and the other ranks of the clergy. Because all of our prayers that we talk are from the people or to the people. It's in inviting the people into full active participation of the liturgy.
Can a deacon get married, or do you need to enter as a single person?
No. Nope. Deacons more often than not are married. Right now we have two men in formation that are single. And really, that's really our first time that we've done that since I've been engaged in the process. So that's kind of like the non-norm.
So what is the average age of a deacon entering formation?
Right now, the average age is 50. So we're recruiting younger. And actually, the early church used to recruit young.
So what is, why? Why are you recruiting younger?
Because when you really look at the sacrament of marriage, when you talk about living a life in the community, more often than not, if we live a good marriage, we're going to be living a good diaconate service. Because it's the same. The yes is the same. It's a yes that I made to my wife when we got married and took the vows. It was a yes forever. I am offering myself to you to lift you up. And she did the same for me.
Now, you bring up a good point because you talk about her commitment as well. And I think that's something that we don't really fully understand. It's not just a commitment from you. If you're married, this is a family commitment. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of that and the formation? Because it is a full family formation there.
For the Diocese of Orlando, we do work with, we require the wives to be part of formation. Terrible things can happen when one person grows spiritually and the other stays put. You know, it kind of becomes what I call the Moses syndrome. You see Moses moving
house
on. And went, yeah, kind of. You know, that one scene where the princess comes and finally finds Miriam and they're talking about Moses. And the queen says, I lost Moses to you. And then Miriam says, I lost Moses to his God. You know, it's kind of one of those things. If I disrupt the balance we're always telling deacons is that it's God, family, work, ministry. And if you put ministry over here because you think it's with God, to the neglect of your job, which is you have to sustain yourself, your family, to the neglect of your family, bad things can happen. And we've seen it happen.
So let me ask you a little bit. If you enter the diaconate and you are married and yes. your wife passes away, can you remarry?
No. We take a conditional vow of celibacy. So when that bond has been broken by death, the promise that we made, the promise transfers to the church, that the my bride becomes the church. I have to be satisfied with the love and community that she gives me to fulfill my vocation.
So this brings me to something that you mentioned, Bishop, in your homily to the Transitional Deacons last April in 2016. You said, individualism makes it difficult today to give oneself generously to the gift of celibacy and chastity. So should these men considering the diaconate take into account this issue of celibacy and what it implies? Because really, you know, you go into marriage, but you never really think about marriage and celibacy.
Yeah, I think the question is, you know, about chastity. You know, that's yes. the question.
Yes.
Commitment to one.
Yes, thank you.
So that's the whole promise, you know. Celibacy then is, you know, the commitment to God. You know, so you do take that commitment in marriage to God, and you also take the commitment of chastity. So the idea is it's a commitment to one person. So it's a kind of a very difficult thing, and it can be very hard for some people. Some people don't understand it, especially older people. They find it very difficult. We have some deacons who have been deacons for a number of years, and there are issues that come up and, you know, they have to leave ministry. Mm-hmm. So but you hopefully will help them discern that. You know, it's not something that you force people to do. It's like priesthood. You have to kind of grow in that and an understanding. But one of the issues is the whole thing of lack of companionship. Mm-hmm. You know, couples are very strong in their relationship with one another. It can be very hard when one of them, especially a wife, dies of a deacon. Sometimes, you know, they're isolated from their family or isolated from their support. So that's part of the whole formation, to help them understand that they are a family to the community, to help them understand not to get so isolated. So that's all part of the ongoing formation that we have we've developed over the years to understand what it means to be celibate and chaste.
So our streaming manager, Catherine Laguna, is the daughter of Deacon Laguna. And I'd like to ask you a little bit from a personal perspective, Catherine. First of all, when did your father consider becoming a deacon? Was it a overnight decision, or how did that go in your family?
Well, actually, the funny part is that I remember him coming to us maybe towards the end of my middle school years or early high school years, and he had considered it. And went to the formation sessions, and, you know, he's very intrigued, and people have always told him that it was it was a clear thing that you should be a deacon. You sound so much like it. Your faith it shows. You're always in feeding the homeless, or you're taking care of people spiritually. And but at that moment in his life, he probably thought that his family life was very important, and we were still very young. So then I think he kind of like postponed it for a moment. But then when I was in college, he came back with the idea, and he said, you know, this is very important to me. I hope you guys are very, you know, on board with it. And we had talked about it as a family. And honestly, since I was young, I've always thought that he would be a very good deacon. And he's always helped me spiritually. He's like a spiritual guide, you know, guidance mm-hmm. and all that. So it was just like a really long, it's a long journey. You know, you always want to make sure that you're supporting, you're a supportive factor in your family, that the family is always very committed in it, because you see different people fall off, but that's just because the support is not there, just like Bishop Noonan was saying from before. And I think it's a very good quality to have everyone together for it. And then the factor also comes in with like your parish and how supportive are they, and then, you know, just the parishioners that are there supporting you along the way. And then the moment where it comes where, you know, the support has always been there and they go to your ordination, that's something that, you know, mm-hmm. it's like the reward out of all of that. You know, you were pulled from the community to serve, and then just like Deacon Joe said, you're giving back to the community, but that community is there to celebrate with you, and that's the beauty of the whole process. So
it was interesting that, you know, a lot of times that happens to a lot of men. It's like, oh, you have such young children. Wait, this is a God calling. This is God calling. But it was beautiful that you came in. And so as you went through the process, mm-hmm. did you see, did you ever see the changes, or did you, you know, how was it in your family?
I think in the family, like, you know, since he was so involved in church, it made us want to be more involved too. So then, you know, we went to formation classes sometimes with them, and then we got to see like their whole group and, you know, very involved in the church. And it's just, it's something that you also have to realize, just because your parent is a deacon, you also have to be that example too. There's a lot of people in the community that are now looking at you to be that role model. There's other kids that are now looking at you to make sure that, hey, look, it, she's Catholic, she's very faithful, is she really following what she's supposed to be following? So you also become that instrument of God and serving others too, because, you know, it's a family unit now. It's just something that I found a great responsibility as well.
So I know you're real close to your brother. You do have a brother.
Yes, Lawrence, I know.
He's thinking about it.
And the great thing about Lawrence is that, you know, he was always an altar server from such a very young age, you know. So he also was able to serve with my dad, you know, as altar server, my dad as a deacon, or, you know, in the formation process. So that's also that completely tied our family together, you know.
Can you share with any special stories?
I think like a huge story that comes to mind is at ordination, and in the fact that, you know, the wife is such an intricate part of formation too. So then it was just the moment where my mom, Elia, got to finally like help my dad be dressed in the albs and then put the dalmatic on. And it was just a beautiful thing, because it's like all of her hard work too, all of that support system, all of those classes and the journey, you know, she got to be one with him too at that moment, to help him along, and then to finally say, now you're a deacon and I'm here, I'm still here, so to support you. So
what a very beautiful nice moment,
kind of very, very special, you know, because you can see the community and the support.
And I agree, because I remember I was just looking at my Instagram account, and I have a picture when dad and you were giving him the rite of the acolyte, and I have a picture still from that, and I think it was like 6-7 years ago, and that's something that I'll always remember, and it's something that I'll cherish.
I guess most of the time, too, most people say, like mothers and fathers say when their son gets ordained, or when your dad got ordained, the laying prostrate on the floor is that moment of really when they sing the Litany mm-hmm. of the Saints. It's a very kind of, it's overwhelming emotionally, but it's also kind of a very fulfilling moment, because, you know, this is what it's all about, you know. This is
exactly
about it.
I remember the ride home after ordination, and Judy sitting there just thinking, and then the next thing out of her mouth, she says, my job's done.
No.
I said, wait a minute, what do you mean your job's done? He says, I've been praying for years to get you back in the church. Now, my job is done.
Yeah. And that's the beauty.
Yeah. And I think another story is, you know, like the role that you have as a deacon now. And I remember my dad coming home one day and telling me, you know what I got to do today? And I was like, oh, what? Like, what else? I mean, you do so many amazing things already as a deacon. And he's like, well, I went to a hospital and I baptized a baby that is in danger of, you know, maybe dying, passing away. Exactly. And for him, it was just something that mm-hmm. I can see it in him. It was like the spirituality just pouring out of him, the happiness that he was able to be that instrument of Jesus and giving that blessing and the baptism to that baby that was in danger of dying that night. And it still gives me chills to this day, because it's just something that, you know, it's much needed. The deacons that go out there and minister outside the walls of the church is a very important ministry within our community. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting, you know, the ordination of a bishop is kind of, the whole ceremony is very, very interesting. But, you know, for the ordination, you have to wear a deacon stole and a deacon dalmatic and a priest stole and a priest chasuble, so that you are the fullness of priesthood then.
Wow.
Deacon, priest, and bishop.
Beautiful.
So you wear actually the vestments underneath.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's kind of a
great
symbol.
That's the beautiful
symbolism.
Connection.
Yeah,
the beautiful
it really
connection
is.
In between the presbyterate and diaconate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That we are the full, when we serve together at a parish level, we are the full representation of the bishop, the chief shepherd.
Yeah. At priesthood ordination, the deacon, the priest who's about to be ordained, comes in as a deacon. He's wearing the deacon mm-hmm. stole and deacon dalmatic, takes it off and puts on
and
the...
Mm-hmm.
So the symbolism is again there, you know.
Yeah.
You never stop being a deacon.
That's so beautiful. On a funny note, and I guess I'll leave it on this, the funny thing is when you get people coming up to you or your dad, or, you know, my dad's a deacon. So then he's like, oh, so hi, Father. How are you doing, Father? And then, you know, you just got to go with the flow because people don't know.
Father. He is Father. You know, I'm a real Father.
He's like, I'm right here. He can't be an actual priest.
We have fun with that sometimes. Yeah. When I get that, I'll just lean over and kiss my wife and say, hi, honey.
Well, when I was growing up, we had a monastery by where we lived, Benedictine Monastery, and this priest, they were allowed to go out and say Mass occasionally when there was a need. So this Benedictine priest used to come out, and he used to start off his homily. You know, people would never have seen him before. He says, as my beloved wife told me, be short and to the point. He got everybody's attention.
Right away.
At the end of his homily, then he'd say, my wife died a number of years ago. Then I decided to become a priest.
Wow.
So you get lots of attention.
Oh, yes.
But you kind of get a lot of help, too. You know, you get a personal critique, you know. Mm-hmm. What were you talking about today? What did you mean?
Oh, she clears all mine before I even get up there. No, you can't say that.
No, I guess if you look over our diocese, we are blessed because a lot of things we couldn't do if we didn't have the deacons. A lot of things involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when the priests are away, you know, going through more courses or you know, on mission trips, the deacons are left with the parish, and, you know, they're the responsible ones to make sure that their community stays with, you know, Holy Communion during the week.
Preaching the gospel.
Exactly.
So. Baptizing.
Mm-hmm. Marrying. Yeah. They're an important part of the church, too.
You know, Bishop, in that homily, you also offered the words of Pope Francis, asking us to use these three very important verbs in choosing one's role in life: guiding, discerning, and integrating. It seems that this would be an integral part of the decision-making process. And speaking of that process, Deacon Joe, could you elaborate a little bit on the requirements and the process of becoming a deacon?
The requirements, to kind of get them in a nutshell, is basically, we've already talked about the age, 30 to 55. Mm-hmm. You know, we're looking at younger men so that they remain in the families. You know, they have a family. It was wonderful. August, we were having our first retreat for the new group coming in, and we had a three-week-old baby participate through formation. And another woman, I believe hers is like 3 weeks. You know, they're infants. These infants are going to grow up in a community that is growing in faith and understanding God's will for the family. So it's a real beautiful thing. And it's really, we're looking for couples also that have been married for 5 years in a stable relationship. One of the things that we always tell the deacons is that when you come into formation, it's an amplifier. Odds are we're not going to teach you anything new or too new. You know, a lot of the stuff, if they've been working within the community, a lot of it is going to be old hat, maybe reframed. Mm-hmm. But it's going to amplify. If there's challenges within the marriage, it will be amplified. If you have a strong marriage, if you have a strong faith, it's going to be amplified and just energize you to unbelievable levels. Hmm. And so we're looking for that long-term, stable commitment within husband and wife. And we're looking for people within the Diocese of Orlando. So you have to be in the Diocese of Orlando for at least 5 years.
And then I'm assuming that you would make a commitment to practice within the Diocese of Orlando.
Correct. Now, nowadays, you know, with corporate, the way jobs change, you know, those things have to be looked at and are considered when they happen. But for the most part, we're looking for a committed to our community. You know, we come from the community, and we are really ordained and given back to the community.
So you speak of coming from the community. Is there a pastor request out to the parish community to suggest deacons? How do these suggestions come about?
I think this is a first step. This, you know, we're making a call out to that there are good men out there. There are faithful men out there and solid marriages that we're saying, look at your community and bring them forward. Ask the question. That's where it comes from. December, we'll have information nights, five information nights throughout the entire diocese so that we can help them understand what they're getting themselves into, because it's not easy. Yeah. It's not a quick, you know, come in, okay, you look good, bishop lays hands on you, and good to go. There is a formative process that's 6 years long. You know, formal discernment year to say, this is what the diaconate is, this is the expectations, this is what's going to, you know, here's how it impacts your family life. And then there's the formal partnership with St. Leo's for the next 5 years. Formative lessons that we'll have, 400 hours of really looking at, who am I as a person? Who am I as a minister? How does the rest of the world see me? And then we'll talk about the specific issues that impact our ministries in this world today.
So tell me a little bit about your journey as a deacon, your profession, and how that's been incorporated into your serving in the diaconate.
You know, when I finally said yes, I was the executive director of a Habitat for Humanity affiliate in Brevard County. Mm-hmm. So I was in the community, literally, you know, in the poorest parts of neighborhoods, in the forgotten places. And so as I was really doing that work, and the church and God was tugging at my heart, that's what finally convinced me to say, I'm already doing this. Let me go through the process.
How to make that final commitment.
How to make that final
Step
commitment.
It, up.
It is a big commitment, you know.
Absolutely.
And I've always viewed it as the commitment that I've made to my wife. We've been married for 36 years. Excuse me. Sorry, dear.
Time flies.
Yes, it does.
Well, you're having lots of fun.
Yeah.
But I think, too, we need to look at the whole thing of, you know, everybody kind of sees the deacon on Sunday.
Hmm. Yeah.
And they say, but that's only little sliver of the reality, because a lot of our deacons are really involved in the community in many different ministries, prison ministry. You could go on, yeah. Deacon Joe will share with you that, you know, we have so many different ministries, and that's so important to see that, you know, they are spiritually, maybe when you see them on the altar preaching and helping with the mm-hmm. distribute the Eucharist and the precious blood, but then on weekdays, what are they doing?
They're in the workforce. They're in the soup kitchens, the nursing homes.
They're evangelizing wherever they are,
yes.
As we're all called to do.
And, yeah. Right.
They're
exactly.
In the hospitals. They're you know, helping those who are, you know, wake services, burying mm-hmm. the dead, you know, you name it, they're there.
Mm-hmm. And even the parts of the Mass reflect their charism, their vocation. Like the deacon is the one that, according to the germ, is bringing forth the prayers of the faithful. Hmm. They're in the community, therefore they know the community. And so when they pray for the community, they're bringing that to the bigger community and saying, here's what's going on.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful example, too, when you talk about go to church on Sunday. Sometimes we're not aware. Well, the lector gets up and reads the first and second reading, but it's the deacon who reads the gospel. So the word of God is so powerful, you know, that's a very special role mm-hmm. for all of us to hear the gospel.
And Deacon Joe was saying, when you have a deacon present, he's also reading the prayers of the faithful. You
know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I love that.
And dismissing the people at the end of Mass. Hmm.
Sending them to go forth
and
serve
not just
the Lord.
Yeah, exactly. So it's their role is to make sure they role model everything they say yeah. and do.
Hmm. We've got to walk the talk.
Yeah.
We cannot be church people and say, okay, I have my church hat on now and I look pretty in this nice white alb and stole and then go out in the parking lot and join in some of the shenanigans.
You have to be a witness in the world.
The witness in the world.
Absolutely.
And really, when you start looking at careers and our secular jobs, that becomes a major commitment. Hmm. No longer can I see the world as the rest of the world sees it, but I have to make those ethical decisions mm-hmm. based on gospel values, which is sometimes not very
difficult.
Well received.
Yeah.
But it might be good, too, to just mention, you know, because Sunday at Mass is just one area, but again,
right.
we also baptize, mm-hmm. witness
right.
marriages, as I said, do wake services, bury mm-hmm. the dead, and bring communion to the sick in the hospital.
Right.
You know, visit the sick I don't know anything else.
Those are the big ones.
The big ones. We want to make sure we get the big ones in there.
We got them, you know. Yeah.
And I think, you know, for me, it's always very important to reiterate, sometimes we are not aware of the role of deacon. And we're not aware of the deacons who are important to us in our lives. You know, they are very important in the life of a community and a faith community. But then there are those that we forget. You know, Francis of Assisi was never a priest. He was a deacon. And, you know, if you want the role model of service, there it is.
Right.
You know, Francis really shows. And that's important for us sometimes to remember, because we always think the priest is this, you know, but we forget there are wonderful deacons out there.
Behind every great priest, there's a great deacon.
Exactly. Wonderful deacons.
Well, let me ask you, Bishop, the difference between, because we talk so much about how closely knit the deacon is with the presbyterate, the priesthood. And so certainly in the steps to priesthood, you have transitional deacons for a year before they are ordained.
And that's only since Vatican II. You know, now deacons have to spend a year. There's a set amount of time. You can't be ordained a priest only within 6 months of receiving the diaconate.
So can you tell me a little bit about the difference between a transitional deacon and a permanent deacon?
There's probably absolutely nothing in the sense that they are required to do everything a permanent deacon does. You know, it's important. They need to know what service is. They need to be able to preach the gospel. They need to do. So it's a wonderful transition. It's like I always call it an internship for our priests. Mm-hmm. For a whole year, usually. We have it for a year in this diocese where we make sure they go into a parish, work, and do everything a permanent deacon would do. And sometimes we have the permanent deacons mentor them because they know what it is. So then I think it builds up a much better relationship later when they become priests because they understand one another and they can work together.
So, Bishop Noonan, in your April homily in 2016, you spoke about Pope Francis's encyclical Joy of Love, where we're invited into this living encounter with Jesus Christ through Scripture. We already spoke about that close relationship of sharing the Word of God, that the deacon, you know, speaks or reads the gospel and proclaims the gospel. You pointed out that it is in the relationship with Jesus Christ that all relationships are strengthened, from family life to single life to deacons, priests, sisters, and brothers. You also mentioned that the goal of the deacon is to be the bearer of the Word of God. As we close today, would you like to comment a little bit on the importance of that living encounter with Christ and how it bears fruit on the work of the deacon?
Well, there's a very old Latin phrase, and it simply says you can't give something that you don't have. And if you don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, how can you give Christ and live Christ with others? And that's the challenge for all of us, not just priests, not just deacons, but everybody, lay people, married people, single people. So I think, you know, that's what Pope Francis has kind of given us that impetus to really take a long, hard look at who are we? And like the gospel, when we're asked, who is Jesus? You know, from the beginning of the gospel, the first question asked is, you know, are you the Messiah? And I think we have to ask that question about ourselves. It's not so much where, you know, Messiah might be around, but, you know, is Jesus really alive in my life? Do I know him? Do I love him? And do I really truly want to serve him? And I think that's a challenge for all of us because we, as Pope Francis says, we're afraid to let Jesus out. We lock him up in our hearts. And we have this little private relationship with him. And, you know, he's there when we need him. But that's not really it. You have to give yourself away in order to really come to know the Lord.
As it said in the homily or the reading last weekend, who do you say that I am?
And look who answered the question.
Peter.
Yeah. And then Jesus said to him, you know, you are my rock. So that's what we have to do. We have to give ourselves. And then Jesus will probably tell us we may not be a big rock, but we might be a little pebble that really can make something grow into something bigger.
Well, thank you so much, Bishop and Deacon Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Glenda.
I'd like to point out that the informational evenings that are being offered will begin in December, as Deacon Joe mentioned, December 5th at Resurrection in Lakeland, December 7th at Holy Name of Jesus in the Atlantic, December 12th, Our Lady of Hope in Deltona. December 14th, St. Timothy, Lady Lake. And December 19th, St. Mary Magdalene in Altamont Springs. For more information, please reach out to Deacon Joe at jgassman, that is J-G-A-S-S-M-A-N, at orlandodiocese.org, or visit orlandodiocese.org. Once there, select the Ministries and Offices tab and go to Deacons.